Janet Morris and Barbara Richman, with the second interview with Anne Lowenthal on June 18, 1982. Mrs. Lowenthal, would you like to tell us something again about the Israel Museum? We've been talking about that on the last tape, and would you like to continue talking about it?
Yes, I would, because it's one of very deep and close personal interest. And this year was really the first year we did not attend an international meeting of the Israel Museum, and that was because, I don't believe I said anything about this, because we had to go partly by choice and partly by necessity to England instead and spend some time there. Did I talk to you at all about that? Well, I think it was one of the most interesting experiences of our lives. And by the way, that fact has been confirmed by some recent literature and notices about the place that we visited in England. I have to tell you that because our children are at Stanford, California, and our son-in-law is a professor at Stanford, our son-in-law, our daughter, there are two children, and that is a 10-year-old daughter and a new baby. I think he was about 6 months old when they took the flight with the student body that was being transferred to England for that semester, took the flight over the pole, that made it shorter to get to England, and arrived at the housing which Stanford had taken for the purpose of having a Stanford in England. And that was a famous house called Clivedon. That's spelled C-L-I-V-E-D-E-N. When they had been there for several weeks, they cabled us or telegraphed us or something and said, "You cannot miss this. You must come and be our guest here." Did I not talk about this at all?
Yeah, no.
So we flew from Pittsburgh, then to New York, and New York to London. London, they had sent a Stanford minibus, which was the way they had the general arrangements. Generally, and they told us where to come from London to by train to another stop off, which was Padlow, I think, and they picked us up there. Students were sent to pick us up. They were apparently very much occupied with classes themselves, and the students knew exactly where we would be. Took us to the house, and I must say this was one of the great experiences of our lifetime, because we had my daughter, her husband, her daughter Sarah was in school, and the baby was about 6 months old. The new little grandson was 6 months old. They had the suite of Lady Astor at Clifton, and she arranged for us to have a suite, and I'll thank you whose suite that was. But it was most impressive. The whole place is a great British palace, and it's where the Clifton set gathered. It's where the Prince of Wales met Mrs. Simpson, and she and her husband were guests of the Astors. I believe they were directly invited by the Astors. And so you know what kind of people were there. Clifton itself is a beautiful country place, which has a mile of beautiful fields on the Thames, a mile of embankment on the Thames River. And I leave it to you to imagine what an experience that was. And I was so grateful to Mary for thinking that we ought not to miss an experience like this. I thought that showed great appreciation of her parents' ability to enjoy these varied experiences. So I can tell you that the couple of weeks we spent there were so extraordinary an experience in every way. And most important to this discussion is the fact that the Jewish community that surrounded that little town, or that lived in surrounding towns and the little town, very much made it their business when they found out that the Felsingers were at Padlow to invite them for Shabbat evenings and to make them aware of the fact that they were most welcome at the synagogue, and most welcome particularly because their 10-year-old daughter was in school with some child in the village, most especially anything that they would like to have offered in the way of hospitality to this child the community was very anxious to offer. That gave me an insight that was quite important to my whole knowledge of Jews in many parts of the world. You know, I have come upon various levels of their culture and adjustment and their feeling of selfness in the place where they live. This interested us very much, and I must say we, all of us in our own way, enjoyed the whole experience. In fact, Mary felt, because a classmate of hers at Radcliffe was married to a doctor who had been just sent to Paris to do some research, and her friend got in touch with her, and Mary invited, we call her Zaza, invited Zaza to come and spend some time at the prison. So it gave us a chance to see another friend again. I must say that was a wonderful experience. And then whenever you wanted to go into London itself, which was about 25 miles away, there was a little minibus that ran you to the station, and the station took you in. And we especially have an English artist who's on our list. We're very devoted to him. He's a good artist, we think, but not particularly a successful selling artist, but we're definitely his clients. And so he was waiting for us. Oh, he was just thrilled at the idea of our being in England. And he and his wife have a three-legged cat whom he has painted and drawn so many times, and we've seen pictures of the cat, but had really never seen the cat, so that was lots of fun for us. It was quite a wonderful day of being together, and we came away with a few more drawings of his, which we really don't have the up. I have one or two things of his up, but I don't think he's good. And
what is his name?
I'll give it to you in just a minute, but I'll have to be thinking a minute. I know it's right here on.
Bernard Farmer. Bernard Farmer is his name. Yes. Now, many of his things have just this, I think, very beautiful, soft declaration of the relationship of forms and colors and simplicity, but it has to be got up. Now, I would not call him successful. He is not a great seller or anything like that. But we're very quite charmed by him. And we're quite charmed by his personality and his three-legged cat when he draws more.
And we did not come away empty-handed. We bought a couple of things which we haven't even framed yet. We haven't done anything about yet. But we always, he knows pretty much what to send us from time to time, and we're very happy to keep in touch with him. That's just one of the,
experiences. I believe you weren't able to attend a council meeting for the museum.
We weren't able to attend that council meeting of the museum because we were going to Clifton anyway, and we were going to be there for a number of weeks, and that eliminated the going to Israel, and we felt pretty badly. So, of course, I must say, one of the things when you talk about in lieu of being at that meeting of the museum, I made it a point, I think we both did, of taking our granddaughter, who really doesn't get much time with us, to the major museums of London. We know them so well. We've gone so often. We have gone so far back that we could say right off to Sarah what we could promise her some of the greatest things in the world that she was going to see, and this would be a great occasion in her life. And it really was, and it was for us too. The fact that we could transmit to her some of our feelings about what was in these museums, I think she felt it emotionally as well as a teaching thing. It was a tie between us, and I really think she sensed it and responded very fully. So it was a lovely experience for us. And we did have a chance while we were in England, but it did prevent our going. For the first time, we didn't attend an international council of the Israel Museum last year. For the first time, we've done every single time except, well, it didn't have meetings in the real war years, so this was the first time in a regular year. And we did have a feeling that our president, who is Lord Rothschild, Edmond Rothschild, comes not only because he is deeply interested all these years, very deeply interested, is a great patron of the museum. But his aunt, the Rothschild aunt, one of the last remaining older members of the family, who was not well enough in recent years to come, but who invariably makes a phone call from Paris, and she lets them know when she's going to call so that everybody can hear the phone call, and they make it a point to have her know that they miss her and that they're in session and what they're doing, and she's interested in everything they're doing, and it's a beautiful ceremony that goes on about this.
I believe you said you and I were instrumental in the Far Eastern art that the museum
Yes.
Do you want to tell us something about that?
Well, I'm trying, now you see, if you turn around, you'll see, for instance, on that bottom, the bottom there, are some of the heads that are, one is Cambodian and one is another. When we went on this trip to the Far East, around the world, starting there, not really starting there, we started at Hong Kong, I would say, and just kept going around. We had enough knowledge ahead of time of the people we wanted to see, and I would say some of the great advantages we had of the communications by others in our behalf, and people who were nice enough to, did I go into this at all to tell you that Henry Luce was my husband's classmate, and they sat next to each other. Well, he always had time, the time men always met us and said, what would you like us to do? Our Israel connections were always valid, our university connections were good, our Yale connections were good. We just had a whole cluster of varied relationships in varied cities. For example, at Hong Kong, a very interesting Pittsburgher, very sorry, it's a man, I'll think of his name because it's a distinguished family here, was in government service and was married to a beautiful Chinese girl. And he immediately, Preston Scheuer, you probably know members of the Scheuer family here. Do you not know any of them?
The name is
they're a wonderful family here. In fact, I'm trying to think. I think one of the Scheuers lives in a famous house in Squirrel Hill that was the house of Willa Cather. I'm almost sure one of the Scheuers lives in that. Yes, I'm quite sure. Well, no, I know who does. I'm sorry. I know who does. She's a Radcliffe graduate. She's a writer herself. Betty Mertz lives in the house of Willa Cather here. And they are friends of ours, and we just love seeing that house whenever she has anything that we're invited for. And I prize the friendship of both of them, both interesting people. And we know them because His brother, I think his name is Edward Shoyer, Betty Mercy's husband, but his brother was in Hong Kong as the representative of some publication group married to a brilliant, knowledgeable, very knowledgeable Chinese girl. Think of some of the stories about her. And they received us and were our hosts in Hong Kong and showed us. I think they started us off on the whole Orientalia. They really gave us a beginning to talk about all this. And what I mean is they had us in their home. You know, we were there and intimately involved with their lives in a way. And she came with him to Pittsburgh once. I'm way off my story. Does that matter very much? You can cross out wherever and put it anywhere else you want. But she came to Pittsburgh once, and when she saw some cowboy pictures of some kind, and she said, "You know, you people would never think of thinking at all that when you're with your friends, and you wouldn't think, I wonder if that person really was had cowboy experience." She said, "You wouldn't think in those terms," but she said, "Everybody's always thinking that I, because I'm Chinese, undoubtedly know the some ancient thing, that I have a very real today relationship with some ancient thing they happen to know about the Chinese people." And she was trying to see how cultures do not really understand each other in terms of their history and their antecedents and their current interests. It was a good lesson to me when I heard her talk about this. Well, we had time people from the Time Life staff who always received us in these places, and we had people we knew from Pittsburgh, and we had people we knew through Israel, and we had people we knew in so many ways. And by the way, on that trip around the world, we tried to put together these varied, and not put together, but we tried to see the varied sources of information. We tried to communicate with these sources so that we had maybe one of the broad points of view then when we emerged from the experience. And the same thing happened to us when we went down the Americas, when we went to all the countries of the Americas. In some cases, they were university connections we had. In some cases, they were Israel connections we had. In some cases, they were Pittsburgh connections. But it was the most wonderful thing to have this variety of connections, because I think we got a much broader view of what took place.
And one of the connections that led me to Jules Zadzinski.
In the Pacific area, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, and this is quite incidental, I don't have to put it down, but I think it's of interest. It just happened this year. We went to the Hoover Institution of Stanford. Hoover Institution has a library of the records of not only the Hoover administration, but the records of the political and governmental setup of the United States. In depth, I will tell you that the papers, the national papers and the national records, are so broad and so deep and so important, I would say, that to go to the Hoover Institution, it's called the Hoover Institution of War and Peace, I believe, is the full title of it. And it was either a grant of the Hoover family who were Californians. It was either a grant, and all these papers were there, all kinds of papers, plus all kinds of papers that the Hoover Institution has had the money to collect governmental papers and classify them and record them and put them in the catalogs. And when we went in, we were just amazed. We spent days there just looking up our own, let's say we followed the whole question of what started Palestine, what were the papers, what were the enabling records we got all of this, and I just wrote as fast as I could on cards that I got hold of to go through the whole history. And I was interested just a couple of weeks ago to talk with Mrs. Elkis, who lives here in the city, and whose family, her husband's family, were ambassadorial people for the United States. The father or grandfather, the father of her late husband, was our ambassador to Turkey. And through, and his name was Abram I. Elkis. He may have been the uncle. Now, I think now that's more correct. I think
that
he
was her
the
father
uncle,
or her grandfather?
His father's brother, I think,
mm-hmm.
would have been the ambassador to Turkey, Abram I. Elkis. And I don't believe that's her husband's father, but I could be wrong there. And I think it's an important matter of information for Pittsburghers to know, as a matter of fact. Well, I began to get out these papers. It was marvelous to look over these data. They were the records of all the things that took place that finally gave the assurance for governmental assurance and international governmental assurance for the founding of a state. It wasn't a state first, it was just the taking over, say the right to go in and live, the real right was our own. That was Palestine was ours, but the papers that really began to come through were internationally certified papers that told all this history, where Wilson entered, where Morgenthau entered, where all these people entered. I just think it's wonderful to have had access to even see them myself. And that's where I found out that Joe Zaslav, who lives here in Pittsburgh, really had an important a part as an observer, a reporter, a keeper of some of the knowledge, some of the facts that had to be assembled. And we've told him we want to have some long sessions with him, just right near here, and talk over a personal addenda that don't get into the records, you know, just because we would be interested.
Well, I think when we came in, you and Mr. Lowenthal showed us that fascinating letter from the Israeli Museum to you. I think maybe that might be.
Would you like to, this is very, I think, very interesting, and a very interesting turn that's taken place. There were always people who collected things in Israel who realized that they had either artistic merit or historical merit. And when the Israel Museum began to receive, when the government began to receive some of these things, first of all, you know, there's a Yad Vashem, which is a sort of institute of memory, of remembrance museum. Some of the things are there. But by no means was there the differentiation between those things of such quality that they deserved keeping in their own terms, you know, their value and their quality and their importance as objects of the testimony to our place in regard to the land, our guardianship of the land, our interest in the resources, our attachment to the history. All these things played a part in Israel's whole structure. Development. That's what I'm searching for. I think I've made this maybe too much a part of my discussions with you in terms of our deep connection with an interest in Israel. But it goes to in various directions. Of course, it's the people. I think I told you how I sat on desert sand myself, late hours of the night, waiting for planes to come in to deposit the forlorn, the forgotten, the abandoned Jews of the world. I can't tell you. I mean, I still feel every emotion of those. But we would sit there in the sand. There was nothing else to do. I'd spread a coat or something and sit there and wait for planes to come in. And I believe I said to you that these pilots who were hired just for the occasion, they were mainly Americans who knew how to fly from being in the wars. I think that is what they did. And they were hired to bring these people from everywhere and bring them right to Israel. And we would be waiting for them because we were always told what was going on. Some plane was coming in, maybe at such and such a time. And I guess one of my strongest memories is not only having a coach go out and sitting on that sand and waiting, but seeing that sort of rough and ready pilot get off the plane and come docking over and saying, she don't even know what her life, how wonderful her life is going to be here compared to where I took her from. She would say with his head on some woman or some child. Then he would point out a man and say, I don't know whether he'll make it or not, but I got him here. And the emotion of those pilots who were just, and I don't want to tell you, they looked like cowboys who just had this job and they were doing a job, but they didn't lack for some perception of, you know, what they were actually carrying out for some as somebody's in somebody's need.
And I think I mentioned to you this little girl, because it's an ineradicable memory for me, this little girl, because of my baby home. And she never stopped combing her hair all the time she was around. They brought her something to eat, and she just could hardly eat. She was just fascinated by the fact that her hair could be combed. She didn't even know it could be combed. These were brought from, you know, everywhere. I mean, they were brought from the Arab countries of other places. They were brought from distant points, from Turkey or somewhere else.
And that went in.
This would have been about 1933 or 4. I think 33, sorry, not 33. And we did this for weeks we were there, and then would go back and clean up a little bit. And we knew a few people. It wasn't an organized state at all. You know, it was really functioning. It was in being, but it wasn't functioning. And when I think of it, I think of the privilege I had of going through that. You know, that just seems to me like one of the great human assets of my being. Well, it was time almost more than any personal merit or anything. It was the being there. And you know, I feel very badly that this year, I have to interject this, that this is the first year we haven't gone in all the years since that time, except the real war years. They were, you know, when we were all at war and couldn't go to places, and when places were not, we were not supposed, you couldn't get passports for certain places, New York, for example. I would say I had a lot of emotional difficulty with this year, because I feel in many ways I should have been there. So we just cling to every little bulletin that comes in. And I think my husband may have mentioned to you that this year there was a change in the administration of the, not the administration, I would say the leadership, the lay leadership of the Israel Museum, which is a very great institution now. And when I mentioned the Rothschilds before, I have to tell you, that very often they connect the telephone, and their eldest Rothschild back in France, their aunt, who's a very important lady Rothschild, who would call during the sessions and say, I'm so sorry not to be with all of you. I'm thinking of all of you, and my nephew will tell me all about this. And of course, her money always came in because she was absolutely dedicated. Well, this year, because Lord Rothschild, who's been Edmond, that is, Baron Rothschild, I should call him, who has been the chairman for many years now, decided that it would be very much to the benefit
to the Israel Museum if someone else took the chairmanship. And they said, well, you find the someone else. And he came this year with Felix Rohatyn of New York, who's a very important and distinguished and knowledgeable and dedicated person, and a person who will give his dynamic leadership, I am sure, to this. He's a very important New Yorker. He has helped to settle many of the great problems of New York, the civic problems. He's a leader, and he has the confidence of many people. I thought this was a brilliant, brilliant choice for the museum. And also, we're so pleased this year, since we were not there, that we received first a letter from a beautiful person on their staff, who has always been there, a distinguished German art scholar, and she has just always been a, to me, a symbol of the great scholarship, the great human involvement in man's expression in art. I think she has inspired me from time to time, almost more than anybody else, because she will just say a simple sentence about the meaning of something.